crisp white uniforms accented with bold red trim. The leaders are just kids, probably younger than I am, but they've got the cold, brainwashed look of soldiers of the highest rank. Not one of them would hesitate to bash my head in. They've got a few even younger kids with them, who are being dragged along, sobbing, in chains. New Order families and couples stroll by, elegant in their fine clothes. They don't look at the chained kids, or seem to hear their wails. But I do see the looks on those kids' faces, the hopelessness and the pain. I do hear their screaming. I walk past the banner-lined street that will take me to the palace and the One's headquarters. Without even meaning to, I find myself approaching the troop instead. Though it's the last thing in the world I want to do, I can't not help. Chapter 39. I have the sudden, eerie feeling that something is horribly wrong as I'm walking toward the troop. I can almost feel hands pressing down on me, choking out the air, and even in the thin material of my dress and the chilly breeze, I start to sweat. Wit is in serious trouble. How can I help him now? Entrances to the Shadowland are few and far between these days, and I could never get to Mrs. Highsmith's portal quickly enough. The youth troop is standing at attention. They've already spotted me ambling toward them. I'll just have to pray he can get himself out of whatever horrible mess he's in, I think, remembering Renzi's ruined face. I'm on edge, and the cold stares of the troop as I approach aren't helping. What kind of moron walks right up to brainwashed killers without even so much as a disguise? Yours truly. I panic and do a quick face scramble, but the New Order youths start to crack up as I draw near. They point and snicker, imitating me, and I get the sinking sense that maybe I'm a little cross-eyed, and that my nose is skewed to one side of my face. The kid at the head of the line blows a whistle sharply, demanding decorum. I can't see his face, but the troop immediately stands at attention. Just kidding around, I say, forcing a weak laugh and quickly rearranging my features. I tap the last kid in line on the shoulder, and he spins around, ignoring the reproach of the whistleblower up front. I'm here to join the troop. I want to be a New Order soldier someday, I gush. I was hoping to destroy freedom and imagination. Other kids gasp and turn around at my mention of the forbidden words. Perfect. A boy with jet black hair snaps the strap of my dress. Oh, really? He sneers. You're not exactly up to protocol with this little outfit. An older teenage girl yanks on my newly disguised, dirty blonde hair. Her own hair is so tight, it pulls back her whole face. And didn't anybody tell you? All the spots for uglies are full. I shrink inside, even though I know the truth. I'm the only one in the world with enough power to rival the Ones. But a well-aimed insult can still sack me with a boatload of self-doubt. It's my dream to honor the NO, I press on, careful to keep any hint of irony from creeping into my voice. Truly. Chapter 40. True New Order youth material joined at the beginning of the ascendancy, the girl says as an older boy wrenches my arms behind my back. They saw the light of the one who is the one. They followed the path of true justice, another boy says, with robotic detachment while the first clamps handcuffs around my wrists. All others are fakers, wannabes, a stern little girl with braids chimes in, as they march me to the front of the line with the other prisoners. They are at risk. They support the unholy cause of the resistance. They must be stopped, her shrill voice screeches. The black-haired boy cuts in, whispering in my ear. That's where we come in. On the direct orders of His Greatness, it's our job to make such heathens, he snaps his fingers, grinning wickedly, disappear. I draw a sharp intake of breath. A YES, Youth Extermination Squad. I'd thought they were just a sick rumor. The boy shoves me into the center of the two lines, and I huddle against a couple of the smallest prisoners, a girl and a boy no older than 5, with rivers of tears running down their grubby cheeks. I hear Mrs. Highsmith's voice in my head. Confident. Powerful. There's nothing to be afraid of, I whisper to the shivering kids. Other than torture and death, or maybe just being turned into a mindless drone for the remainder of your days, that is. Take me to your leader, I say to the leering New Order youth sarcastically. Oh, come on, Red, a voice says from the front, a voice that knows how much I hate that nickname. For a girl who so desperately wants to join the NO, you could put a little more feeling into it. I know that nasally accent, that whine. The boy with the whistle turns around, his eyes scanning my face as if he doesn't recognize me, as if he hadn't been trying to win my heart for ages, as if I hadn't once turned him into a weasel because he was such a freaking traitor, as if we'd never met. He grabs my arm roughly and marches me along. Your wish is my command. To the leader we go. Nice dress, by the way. The whistle-blowing head of the YES is none other than Byron Swain.
Chapter 41. I'm in chains, but I can still speak. And as long as I'm alive, I won't stop trying to get answers. I'm looking for Benjamin and Eliza Allgood. Is there a girl around here named Celia? If you tell me where the river is, the place where people, cross over, I can help you get out of here too. I swear I'll help you. There's real desperation in my voice, but the Lost Ones are too busy right now to answer my questions. They're busy doing the same thing they've been doing for hours since we arrived at their camp, or hideout, or whatever this eerie, foul-smelling place happens to be. They're busy eating forest animals. Live. I feel bile rising in my throat. I may never eat meat again. I turn from the grisly scene, but the metallic smell of blood nags at my nostrils. The word abattoir pops into my head, dark and foreboding. I can't remember what it means, but it conjures up images of hacksaws and horror shows, of muscle pulled from bone, and the frenzied desperation of animals awaiting slaughter. The feeling of, I'm next. The fog isn't as thick here, and I can make out surrounding forests. I'm trying not to look over there, though, either. The trees are not made of wood and leaves, but bone. The clouds above are red, menacing, and our shadows seem to have a life of their own. They slither along the ground like snakes, mime acts of violence, dance up your back. I'd run, but there's nowhere to go. Everywhere outside this valley is thick, opaque fog. We're way deeper into the Shadowland than I've ever been before. I had no idea any of this existed, but maybe it means I'm finally getting somewhere. Where there are forests and clouds, there's got to be a river, right? Mrs. Highsmith said something about following the animals. Could she have meant these sad, torn-to-shreds creatures? I strain to see through the fog, squint for some hint of water in the distance. No luck, but I do see more Lost Ones. The zombie-like creatures shuffle toward the camp, their stench preceding them. They've got something with them being pulled on ropes. Looks like... kids? More kids could mean more chances to dupe these ghouls and escape. I scan the crowd, not recognizing anyone at first. They're still far away. There are several older kids, including a bigger guy around my age. A kid with a bandana tied around his head, and a couple of small boys. There's an animal with them, too. A big, loping dog that looks an awful lot like Pfeffer, the curved dog who once tried to eat Wistie and me before we tamed her. Wait, it totally is Pfeffer. That means these kids are resistance. I feel a surge of elation, my pulse quickening. I want to shout to my allies, but I don't want to set off a frenzy among the Lost Ones. I sit tight, watching the kids file in, impatience making me fidgety, and my eyes fall on a cute girl around 16 near the end of the line, with wild curly hair and combat boots. I know that determined, no-nonsense walk anywhere. Janine! Chapter 42. Wit! Janine nearly plows me over with a fierce hug that takes my breath away. She's tied up, and the other kids grumble as their hands are pulled on the rope, too. My heart seems to get caught up in my throat. I bury my face in her dark hair and squeeze her with all of my strength. It's a little awkward with the others around watching, but I don't care about anything but this right now. Thank God she's alive. Somehow, even in this awful place captured by soulless creatures, I'm elated. And surprised to find the only thing I really want to do is kiss her. Janine's never been one for a poker face, and she looks at me with fierce emotion, like she's offering up the whole of herself. I thought I'd never see you again, Wit. I thought... She clutches my arms, and my heart beats faster. I thought you were dead too, I admit, breathlessly, stroking her cheek. I still love Celia, and I don't know exactly what I feel for Janine, but I do know that I've missed her more than I thought was physically possible, and I didn't understand that until this minute. Her serious, intelligent face, free of makeup but prettier than any movie star's, her smart ideas, her strength. I don't ever want to let her go again. Jamila said, I thought, I whisper, still overwhelmed. How did you end up here? The Resistance tried to escape in the Shadowland, she answers. Wit, we looked for you. We waited and we searched. I didn't want to leave you behind, but the N.O. was everywhere in the overworld, and you and Wisty were on all the posters. So we thought you'd gone into hiding and... Shh, it's okay. We didn't know how to find you guys either. Everything just got so turned around. Are Emmett and Sasha here too? I ask, looking around for their familiar faces. Did they make it out? Her eyes fill with tears, and she brushes them away angrily. I don't know. We were split up. I had everything mapped out. We had a plan to get all the kids through to another portal, and Emmett went ahead to scout the path. More tears escape, and her cheeks flush in frustration as she continues. But we got turned around in the fog, and just couldn't get away from them. She nods at the lost ones. I've been racking my brains to figure out what their plans are for us. But it's as if they're hungry dogs following a familiar scent home. They've just been hauling us around on these ropes for days, and I think... Janine flinches uncharacteristically, her eyes widening. I think they're going to feast on us. I glance over at the ghouls, still ravaging the bodies of the small animals, and shudder. No, I shake my head. That's not... That can't happen, Janine. I won't let... Janine shakes her head sadly. We're too far in. There's no way out. Her sage green eyes, once so sharp and full of life, seem resigned. Look, I'm tired of fighting. Can you just hold me right now, Wit? I nod and wrap my arms around her, my chin resting on her cheek, her warm body against mine. We may not have much time left, but for now, we've got this.
Chapter 43. My hair is being yanked, the ropes being tied too tight, and someone keeps kicking me in the heels. As a result of said kicking, I've fallen twice, leaving my left knee bloody and my temper fuming. Kids trained in torture. I hate the New Order. The youth troop, minus Byron Swain, who has disappeared, leaving me absolutely freaking out, once again, about whether he's actually working for them or us, drags me across the busy courtyard with soldiers practicing endless drills, through three heavily bolted metal doors, reminiscent of my prison days, and finally into the leader's office inside the New Order compound. Found this one prowling the streets, General, the snotty girl with the tight ponytail reports, standing at attention. She wants to join the youth troop. She's unable to keep the venom out of her voice. We thought you could, take care of her. Thank you, Genevieve. The general sighs from his chair facing the window, clearly annoyed with the disturbance. He's a large man, with black hair slicked back over his receding hairline. That will be all. Genevieve looks disappointed at not being recognized for her achievement, but she nods and follows the others out the door. The lock clicks into place and we sit in silence for a few moments, the general still facing the window. I take in the office, every object in it tidy and obsessively arranged. Grubby teddy bears and dolls line the bookshelves like trophies in a taxidermy, and I imagine the small hands those dolls must have been ripped from. Then, abruptly, the leader spins around and fixes me with a long stare, one of his eyes made of glass and motionless. It's extremely unnerving. He looks at my mussed-up hair and my bloody knee, and an expression of blatant revulsion distorts his face. I suppose you have something to say for yourself? I swallow. What do you say to a powerful fascist murderer? No matter, he says, striding to the window and thrusting it open. We don't need to talk. I'm happy to just sit back and take in the sweet sounds of orderly conduct. Leaps and bounds better than all that horribly distracting music we used to have around. Don't you agree? His office window overlooks both the exercise yard, where we can hear the New Order youth practicing drills, and the detainment area, from which pitiful shrieks and sobs erupt to punctuate the grimness of it all. I am terrified of this man and his complete lack of empathy. I am terrified of his capacity for torture and his enjoyment of suffering. I am terrified of anyone unperturbed at the prospect of genocide. But right now, I have to be the model of New Order youth, eager to usher in an age of death and destruction, high on horror. Sir, there's been a terrible mistake, I say to his back, my voice animated and full of conviction. All I want, all I've ever wanted, is to serve the New Order with honor. I approached the youth troop because I was stirred by their conviction, but they mistook me for one of those despicable resistance fighters. He turns around again and fixes me with his fake eye, twisting the ends of his mustache. I'll do anything to join the NO, sir. I particularly excel at torture and obeying authority. The general perches on the edge of his desk and methodically works the tip of a pencil through the eye of a teddy bear. Save your lies for someone who's interested, he says. I know exactly who you are, Wisteria Allgood, and you're about to have a very interesting last few hours of your life. I swallow hard, imagining the gruesome acts that can be achieved with a sick mind and a few sharp instruments. But a nagging part of me is wondering how he knew. Did Byron give me up? Again? Chapter 44. If you know who I am, I try to keep my voice strong, try not to plead. You know how valuable I am to the one who is the one. He's your boss, right? As in, you answer to him? I hate myself for using a man I loathe as a shield, but I feel trapped. The general doesn't say anything, but takes out a slip of blue paper and calmly starts writing. If you harm even one hair on my head, I press, it will dilute my gift, maybe even ruin it. You can't hurt me. Level 5 prisoner, he reads, his pen poised above the paper. Traitor to the people, scheduled for confession of her crimes against the New Order. He looks up at me and his glass eye stares, unwavering. I feel a tight knot of panic in my chest. Confession to be obtained by any means necessary. He knows who I am, and he's not afraid. This man enjoys the screams of small children. Just what exactly might he have planned for me? You can't do this, I stammer. You'll pay for it. When the one finds out what you've done to my gift, he'll... The general's face is a mask. his good eye seeming bored. "And where, pray tell, is this gift of yours now, Miss Allgood?" I start to sweat, and my throat goes dry. He's right. Where's the fireball? Why aren't I flaming out? Why does my magic keep short-circuiting when I need it most? I think about what Mrs. Highsmith said about my potential to control electrical impulses in the brain. I don't quite believe it's possible, but the one sure does. And if I ever get out of this office, I'm going to have to take him on. Maybe it's worth finding out if I even possess this gift that he so desperately covets. I look at the general, his head bent over his desk, and imagine the evil thoughts flitting through that warped brain of his. Imagine the unspeakable deeds he has in mind. Then I imagine those thoughts dissipating, evolving. I concentrate every ounce of power I can muster into the effort, like a laser beam zeroing in on the head of a pin. I feel white-hot electrical energy sparking through my body, and just as I think my brain might explode, the general suddenly looks up from his writing. "You know, Wisteria," he says seriously, his face as empty and innocent as a newborn babe's, "I think you'd actually be a terrific addition to our youth troop." "Really?" I gawk at him, shocked, even though I imagined him saying those very words. He touches my shoulder, and I flinch. I'm still not convinced the sick man isn't playing a trick on me. "I urge you to consider it. Come, look at them." He waves his hand across the window, and I can see the kids below. They're viciously beating a dummy with sticks, and stuffing erupts from its torso. I shudder. "Can't you see yourself among them?" He grins eerily. "Guiding them?" "Well, I don't know, sir," I say, having a little fun. "I'm not convinced the youth troop is the best place for my specific talents." "Please!" His bark makes me jump. The general is grasping frantically at my arms, shaking me, his voice verging on madness. And then he's shaking so hard I feel like my head might snap. "Refocus, Wisty," I remind myself. I suddenly realize that I might accidentally take this newfound power to places I hardly understand or can control. "You need only name your price. I'll arrange for extra chocolate rations," he yells, his eyes crazed with desperation. I immediately start to salivate, remembering that divine, otherworldly chocolate from our days at the Brave New World Center, but then catch myself when I remember how freaking addicting the stuff was, and how the NO used it for brain control, to extract all energy and euphoria from young minds. It almost took me to the dark side. "That won't be necessary, General, but I suppose I'll join anyway," I concede, wrenching myself from his grip as he nods, his mustache bobbing. "But only because you said please." Chapter 45. If there's one thing youth troops love, it's marching. With my crisp white and red New Order uniform and my hair in two tight braids, I practice legs up, arms stiff, eyes dead, drill after drill after drill. "Now," a hoarse-faced older boy barks after we've been at it for 3 hours, "we will review maneuvers to capture young resistors." He goes down the line with a box, passing out equipment, but I can't make out what it is yet. "Remember," he says, "the enemy will swerve, dodge, even beg. To eliminate this threat, place the wire against the neck and press the button." I have no idea what he's talking about, but right then a door in one of the buildings opens up and dozens of puppies come bounding out of it, tongues waving in the air. I look around, and none of my youth troop peers even cracks a smile. They look like they're facing down a plague of locusts. I'm uneasy about what all of this means. The NO has a history of using dogs as killer weapons, but I have a serious soft spot for all canines, and I can't help crouching down to pet one. The dog goes crazy, licking my hands and face, its little tail wagging a mile a minute. And then, zap! The little dog collapses to the ground, seizing. What the? One of my NO comrades, a small pigtailed girl with missing front teeth, stands over him with some sort of stun gun apparatus, grinning like a banshee, and then takes off for her next victim. I look around and watch the other dogs yelping as the brainwashed kids gleefully stun them, and I feel the familiar heat building in my body, the anger reaching a boil. But now is not the time to flame out. I'm in the middle of a heavily guarded NO facility, and if I'm lucky, I just might get my chance to see the one. But trying not to let my rage get the best of me is literally making smoke come out of my ears. Stop, Wistie. Slow down. Pause. I snap my fingers as if to break my swelling energy, to stop the eruption of flame, and suddenly, everyone stops moving. Everyone but me. The puppies run around, barking happily again, but the sour-faced New Order youth have all become statues, with stun guns raised in mid-air, their faces petrified in expressions of evil glee. Okay, wasn't expecting that, but it'll work. This is the perfect opportunity to take a look around the complex for the one. The last time I saw him, he boiled the ocean into a tsunami wave of terror, with Wit and me surfing on top of it, right before he vaporized my parents. I sit, leaning against one of the unmoving kids as the stupidity of what I'm about to attempt really hits me. I'm not ready for this. All I want to do is run from this place, and keep running until I'm free. Run into my mother's arms, back into my childhood, to a place where the New Order never existed, and where I was never a witch, where I was never the one people were counting on. But that's not how it is, and it's not how it's ever going to be again. So I ignore every warning screaming through my body, every flight response my nerves are sending out an alert. Instead, I stand back up. Instead, I walk toward my fate, head held high. I am going to find the most powerful being in our universe, and though it seems like suicide, I'm going to fight him. Because I'm the only one who can. I shoo the little dogs away and creep across the courtyard. I'm not sure if my immobilization spell affected everyone or just the trainees, and I'm not taking chances. I inch my way to the edge of the building and stealthily peer around the corner, and immediately pull back in fear and drop to a crouch. Because there, across the grounds on his way into an imposing red building, I see him, the one who is the one. The clouds part in front of him, and his bald head gleams in the sunlight. He strides along confidently with a New Order comrade, and he radiates power, a ruthlessness that makes my resolve crack and shatter. As they get closer, I can see him more vividly, his handsome face hard, his technicolor eyes hypnotic. My breath is virtually knocked out of me as I realize who's with him. None other than the Weasel, Byron Swain. I look at the gravel rocks around my feet and consider lobbing one at his rodent-y, traitorous little head. That, or a lightning bolt.
Chapter 46. The Lost Ones are preparing for dinner. The valley is abuzz with activity as the zombie-eyed undead stroll back and forth to the forest, gathering bones for the fire. Lost children add brush, lost men a tower of skulls. Do bones really burn? Apparently. An older lost woman gnashes her teeth at us and positions a long spear, sharpened at both ends, over the pile. A spit. The only thing they have left to add is the meat. Us. Janine is with the other resistance kids across the fire pit, her hands wrapped tightly along a section of rope. A steady stream of tears is leaking out of her eyes, and she's no longer making a move to brush them away. The kids look shell-shocked and paralyzed, and I don't blame them. How do you prepare to be eaten alive? They've separated me from the others and bound me with twice the rope, so I can only assume I'll be the first to burn. Pfeffer lies at my feet, her legs bound together and sticking straight up in the air. The dog howls, and the sound is full of despair. She had guessed at the Lost One's plans long before we did. Shouts from the forest add to the din, and another chain of kids is dragged into the camp, a couple of them struggling hard against the ropes and passionately demanding justice. I sigh with relief to see that it's Sasha yelling with Emmett on his heels. They're alive. But not for long. My relief is immediately followed by an overwhelming queasiness. This is going to be the end of the entire resistance. You're not really planning to eat us, are you? I say to a passing lost one who looks around my age. Despite Celia's warnings, despite the feasting preparations, I can't really make myself believe it. Of course, the lost one says, licking his scabby lips. Why wouldn't we? Because these are people, I scream, near hysterics. Because these people have emotions and lives. You can't just go around eating them. No, he cocks his head, surveying the fire pit and the prey with the innocence of a child. Lost ones obviously have no moral compass. I wish you were next, the lost girl with the low, haunting voice says, tracing her decaying fingers along my arm. You look yummy. You mean I'm not next? I manage to get out. Of course not, she says matter-of-factly. You're our savior. Why would we eat you? Chapter 47. You are the healer, aren't you, Wit? The lost girl peers at me with her hollowed eyes, and I shiver as she touches my face, the flesh on her arm falling away from the bone. Can you heal me? Fix all of us? Can you free us from the Shadowland? These poor creatures, I think, despite my revulsion. These decaying, monstrous beings somehow believe I can make them better. But what if I can? What if this is what I was brought here to do? Something Mrs. Highsmith said echoes in my mind. You shouldn't fear the dead. Is this what she meant? The girl reads my hesitation and pounces. Help me, Wit. Set me free, she groans urgently. The other lost ones, sensing that this girl might be awarded something they want, scramble over one another greedily. They plead to be the first to be saved, and paw at my face and still-bound arms. The stench closes in on me, and I'm gagging, trapped. I don't know how to help you, I shout, panic rising in my voice. A lost woman shoves the others aside, her stringy hair peeling back from her forehead, her yellow eyes haunted. She claws at my shoulders, shaking me. If you are the child of the prophecy, you must heal me, she demands. This wasn't part of the deal. Don't listen to them, Wit, Sasha shouts over the crowd, and I remember that he has a lot more experience with these creatures than I do. Why do you think they're here? They don't deserve your mercy. What do you mean this wasn't part of the deal? I turn back to the lost woman, still confused about how she and the others got this way. For strangling the children. I was supposed to live forever, she answers, in a detached voice. I want what I deserve. Children? You murdered them? I whisper, thinking of Celia. I was only following the one's orders, she smiles, revealing blackened, chipped teeth with sharp points. But I promise I won't do it again. And you think I'm just going to heal you? To send you back into the world? I ask, bitterness creeping into my voice. The other lost ones eagerly shuffle toward me again at the mention of being healed. Don't you get it? I shout. This is what you deserve. It's not just your flesh that's rotting, it's your souls. Because of what you've done, all of you. I wouldn't set you free even if you tortured me, if you ripped me apart limb from limb. We could arrange for that, the woman says darkly. I steel myself for the attack, but it doesn't come. Instead, the Lost Ones lunge for the Resistance kids, wrenching Emmett and Sasha and the others to their feet. Sasha pushes against them in fury, his hair whipping around his face, a revolutionary to the end. But Emmett, normally a big teddy bear, looks at me steely-eyed, his jaw set into tight resolve. He shakes his head once as if to say, "No deals, never give in, no matter what." "Wit!" Janine shouts as they seize her. "Janine!" Her name tears through me. She shakes her head. "It's okay. You'll survive this, and the Resistance will live on." She's trying to be so, so strong. But her arms grasp at the air in protest, and terror dances in her eyes. I can't pretend this will end well. The Lost Ones drag the group into an enclosed pen in front of me, untying their wrists from the rope. They actually want their prey to move around, something about tenderizing the meat. But the sharp metal mesh that lines the cage looks like it'll prevent any of them from breaking free. The Lost Ones select the first kid, a boy around 12 with light, dirty hair, and drag him near the pit. He's struggling fiercely against these creatures, but they pin him down with ease, tying him to the roasting spit I saw earlier. Panic erupts, and the kids in the pen get hysterical, throwing themselves against the cage, wailing to be freed, reaching out toward their friend on the stake, whose unthinkable fate awaits each and every one of us. But the Lost Ones only howl in response, a horrible, ear-shattering cacophony of pain that I can't shut out. If I won't heal the Lost Ones, they'll force me to hear every shriek, to smell the sulfurous stench, to feel the whole grisly event as each of my friends goes up in flames, as the Resistance is entirely extinguished in a gruesome holocaust. My body buzzes with grief. My heart breaks in defeat. "No!" I roar. I won't let this happen. I thrash against the ropes, and they gouge lines into my wrists. I summon all of my strength and buck frantically, but nothing budges. I'm in position to watch the horror show unfold. My head hangs, despair washing over me, and just when the situation seems most dire, the lost girl who was talking to me earlier reappears, holding a bucket. And then, with a grisly smile plastered across her skeletal face, she slathers sauce and spices all over my dearest friends. She's basting them. Chapter 48. The red fog presses in claustrophobically and beyond. The bones of the forest stretch upward, like arms clawing their way out of this hell. Lost Ones swarm around us, and the smell of burnt hair gags me as they add discarded animal pelts to the flame. I ache for a spell, for a way out, but my magic doesn't seem to work on the dead. The fire pit grows hotter, and hope is just a pipe dream. "Wit," Janine whispers from the pen 5 feet in front of me, and I drag my eyes away from the macabre preparations and look down at her gorgeous, strangely calm face. "Yeah?" I murmur. "It's okay." She grips the metal mesh of the pen, her knuckles white with the effort. She needs to believe that it really is okay. But I can't. I can see the pit from here, and they're wrapping that poor boy tighter and tighter on the spit. "What do you mean?" I ask, despair creeping into my voice. "Janine, look at where we are. Nothing is okay." "It's going to be, though. Even if we don't make it," she says, that strong, determined look that I know so well returning to her eyes. "We'll still have won, because we'll never be this." She looks around. "You're right," I nod. "We'll never be like them." "But before they take us," her voice cracks, "there's something I want to say." She takes a deep breath. "I think you're stupid, and crazy stupid." I know she's desperately trying to find a way to make me smile, as if it's what she wants her last sight of me to be before a tragic end. "And I'll never forgive you for coming back here after you promised me 1,000,000 years ago that you'd steer clear of this wretched place. What kind of pig-headed guy tries to take on not only the totally corrupt ruler of the overworld, but all of the evil in the Shadowland on top of it?" I chuckle weakly. It's what she wants me to do. But I must be crazy stupid too, she goes on, because I actually think you can do it. Because you always made me believe in you in the worst of circumstances. She peers out at me through the cage, her face sincere. The confession hangs between me and Janine, as Sasha's hoarse voice, screaming insults at the lost ones from the other side of the pen, drowns out everything else. You're not stupid, or crazy, I say. You're amazing, and you... And you're going to get out of here, you know, she interrupts. And when you do, you'd better not give up the fight, because this is not the end, and... We're both going to get out of here, I say stubbornly, even though it's clearly a lie. And regardless of what happens, don't act like you're just some lackey falling by the wayside. You are this cause, Janine. You're the whole brains and passion behind it. And without you, the One would have wiped out every shred of the resistance a long time ago. She looks at the ground, and I swallow. And you're so, so beautiful, I say, before I can stop myself, memorizing her features. Beautiful, yeah, right. Janine manages a self-deprecating laugh, looking down at her body. These grubby combat boots and this unwashed hair, and now the last image you have of me is with basting sauce. You look beautiful, I whisper, and mean it. She doesn't say anything, so I try for the lighter tone she's been hoping to get out of me. Who else can pull off apocalyptic chic? Wit. A tear slides down her cheek. I think I love you, she whispers, her wide green eyes looking directly into mine. My heart lurches. Janine, I... But before I can say anything else, her eyes narrow, squinting at something behind me. Oh no, please don't let it be time yet. Chapter 49. What? I ask. Janine? I look over my shoulder to see a lost one approaching us through the red mist. A girl with a halo of wild dark curls. A girl who was kind of pretty, who, when she was alive, might even have been beautiful. Or maybe she isn't a lost one at all. Okay, I get it now. This is how it's going to go. This is the angel of death, come to carry us away from this grisly place, come to help us truly cross over. I guess it makes sense. Why did we ever think we'd make it out of the maze? There's a bitter taste in my mouth, as I feel all the fight finally go out of me. I was supposedly part of this epic prophecy, but it was a lie, just like everything else in this godforsaken world. I'm no different, no more special than anyone else. With anguish, I think of my family. How will Wisty know? Will she think I've abandoned her? And what will my parents do now that I've failed them? If I was meant to die, if the prophecy was all a hoax, I wish I could have just gone out with my parents when they were executed. Like a hero, like a man, instead of as a withering part of a miserable, barbaric, pathetic act of bestiality. I shut my eyes, and the angel whispers my name. I wince. The truth is, I'm still not ready. No, I'm not ready for this at all. But the voice is sweet, soothing. It sounds familiar, actually, like it's something I've been waiting for all my life. Realization hits me like a sledgehammer to the chest. I am a total freaking idiot. Of course she came. Celia! I shout. I see the hurt wash over Janine's face, and I cringe. After my outburst, I shoot an anxious glance at the lost ones, but they seem too preoccupied to have noticed Celia or the disruption. That, or maybe she really isn't here, and I'm just hallucinating. Emmett is on a pole farther down the line from me and Janine, and I see his eyes widen at the sight of this shimmering apparition. So, I haven't totally lost it yet, at least. Celia looks paler than before, and flickery. More like a ghost than an angel, to be honest. You're not lost now, are you? I whisper. She draws back from me, a look of disgust on her face. Not a chance, Wit. I'm not a murderer. I was murdered. I sigh with relief, and then realize this could be our ticket out. I'm so glad you're here. We don't have much time, and... Neither do I, Wit, she cuts in. I'm sorry, but I can't bail you out this time. My light is already fading. I glance at a lost one, the empty sockets of its eyes gaping and emotionless. It licks the raw flesh where its lips should be, and panic builds in my chest. She wouldn't just leave us, would she? Celia strokes my cheek, her touch lighter than air. I wish I could feel it. Then her hand falls away abruptly. I'm sure you'll be fine, Whit. She glances at Janine. You and your girlfriend. Her voice is detached, devoid of its usual sweetness, and her words slice through my heart. Celia, wait! Then the light goes out completely, and Celia is gone again, and all of my hope with her.
Chapter 50. Toothbrush in hand, I'm with my fellow New Order youths, scrubbing the barracks inch by inch, even though they're already spotless. Even though we scrubbed them for 4 hours yesterday and the day before. My comrades in their crisp uniforms and ribboned hair are way more social than I would have thought. Contrary to the ideals of the New Order, during barracks detail, they're positively chatty. Many of the girls have especially warmed up to me now that I'm one of them, a sort of older sister even, and I'm starting to learn that inside each programmed killing machine of the New Order youth is a scared, manipulated child, brainwashed into submission. Kathy's going on about the flirty comment Joseph made to Naomi after drills yesterday, and we're all kind of giggling when, without warning, the door to the barracks bangs open on its metal hinges, the hardwood slamming loudly against the wall. There is an almost audible collective intake of breath as Pierce stalks in, his white blonde hair combed slickly off his forehead, his expression impossibly sinister. Well, Pierce trumpets, clapping his hands together loudly like an enthusiastic camp counselor. The girl next to me flinches at the sound. It's everyone's favorite day. Evaluation day. How's the cleaning coming along, gang? His smile is manic as he peeks into corners and behind bedposts, scanning for offending dirt. One of the younger kids whimpers, but everyone else is silent. Eyes trained forward, shoulders hunched into themselves. Anything to melt into the background. I tense up, white noise flooding my ears and goosebumps erupting on my arms. I keep my head down and wait to be exposed. Someone finally gave me up. But this doesn't seem to be about me after all. Pierce takes his time surveying the quarters, then squats down by one of the boys, surveying his work. You missed a spot, he points out with a smile, and the boy seems to shake all over. He furiously polishes the offending area with his toothbrush, but I can see there's a yellow wet spot forming on the seat of his crisp white uniform. There, there, Pierce coos. No need for theatrics. This is what's called making an example. Very honorable thing you're doing, you realize. The boy knows what's next. We all know. The kid's lip quivers as he threatens to dissolve into sobs. And as Pierce leans toward the boy, I picture the way the giant's face peeled back from his skull and... Don't! I gasp, scrambling to my feet. Kathy shakes her head at me in warning, alarm in her eyes, but I can't stop. Just leave him alone, please! Pierce whips around to face me, sparing the kid. Anger dashes across his face, but it's quickly replaced by delight. A spider that's found a fly tangled in its web. A ravenous spider. What have we here? Pierce purrs in my direction. A new recruit? His cold eyes hold me captive, challenging me. And I'm struck once again by how attractive he'd be if he didn't radiate evil in that bright smile. I look down at the floor as he strides across the dimly lit barracks. My cheeks heat up under my blonde-haired disguise. Does he know it's me? It's the longest I've ever kept a glamour going, but I'm still afraid there's some of Wistie showing through. He circles me like a hawk homing in on its prey, and stops behind me. I brace myself for the strike, teeth chattering. Instead, I nearly jump when I feel his hands on my shoulders, moving over my throat threateningly, drifting down my arms. Nothing has ever felt so unnatural, so wrong. "We have certain policies new recruits have to follow around here. Certain initiations," he says, almost bored. My whole body trembles with fear and adrenaline and hatred at his touch. "I could annihilate you," I think. "I could throw a ball of fire, burn you down to cinder if you don't get your slimy paws off me." But he doesn't, and I don't, because I can't blow my cover, because I can't waste my M just yet, and because, though I don't want to be, I'm scared, really scared of this monster. So his hands sit there on my arms, declaring their silent victory, and my skin crawls. "It must be a challenge to adapt to life in the barracks, he whispers quietly, almost tenderly. "I can imagine how hard it must be when everyone is watching you all the time, cataloging your every move." His fingers trace circles around my freckles, and I flinch. The one is adamant that I report any and all troublemakers immediately. It's very important to him that we maintain order. "But you're not going to be any trouble, are you?" he whispers harshly into my ear, and I feel bile rising. I turn to face him and look him in the eye. "You disgust me," I spit, and my voice doesn't falter. His ice-blue snake's eyes flash. "I disgust you, pet? Which one of us is scrubbing floors?" Then he lurches forward, mouth twisted into a sneer, and he kisses me. No, that's too polite for what he does. Pierce plants his lips on mine, gripping the back of my head fiercely, and shoves his tongue into my mouth. It's the vilest thing I've ever experienced. Pierce sneers, drawing back with a repulsive smirk on his face. "Wasn't that sort of hot?" I am speechless with revulsion and shock. "No, I don't think you're going to be any trouble at all," he smiles with satisfaction. I want to wash my mouth out with lye, or better yet, turn him into a sponge. A grimy, dirty, bacteria-ridden one. Still, I remember all the power it took out of my brother just to keep Pierce's magic at bay, and I don't have that kind of energy to waste. Instead, I spit on the floor and go back to scrubbing the tile with my toothbrush, while the other kids look on, mouths agape. Pierce marches out, his shiny black boots scuffing up my nice clean floor. Right now I've got someone bigger to worry about, but you'll get yours too, Pierce. I promise. Chapter 51. I'm feeling utterly violated, and I can't stop tasting Pierce's gross, papery lips, but I try to put it out of my head as I sneak across the courtyard. There's no more time to waste. I have to get to the one, and soon, before Pierce becomes a bigger problem than he already is. I need help. And unfortunately, that means I need Byron, annoy your face off, Swain. A kid I don't exactly want to be indebted to, since the guy could squeeze water from a rock if it meant something was in it for him. After Byron finishes his daily drills, I tail him to the stock building behind the barracks, careful that no one's watching. I wish I could find a more secretive location, but I think this is the best we're going to do in a place that's crawling with armed guards. It could also be the only time I get him alone. As I slink through the door, Byron's leaning against a shelf, awkwardly trying to feign nonchalance. He looks as officious as ever, with his crisp New Order uniform and his smarmy expression. Was he expecting me? "Wisty," he nods at me, not giving anything away, and I find myself once again questioning Byron's true motives. I knew he recognized me when they brought me in, but he hasn't even tried to connect with me since then. And here he is, looking completely unsurprised that I'm sneaking around after him in a place where we could both be killed. I look behind me. Maybe Byron has his own spies. "You wish to speak with me?" he presses. Byron never changes, does he? I tried to train him to talk like a normal person when he was a resistance member, but apparently my efforts were completely in vain. Since he started out as a New Order spy, I'm still never sure who Byron's really working for, but I'll take my chances this time. If he doesn't cooperate, I could always test out a little more mind control. But since he spent what seems like forever making passes at me, I'm guessing this one's in the bag. "Hey, B, what's up?" I say as casually as possible. "Here's the deal. Now that you're back on the inside, I need you to get me on palace detail. I'm too out of shape to be running those drills, and I'd honestly rather be scrubbing toilets than herding puppies. It's probably best not to lay out all my real motive cards, just in case Swain's seriously back on Team NO. So you'll pull some strings? Cool?" I've found that Byron responds best when I don't leave much room for discussion. "I'm aware that your little drill routine is probably wearing thin. You want to get up close and personal with the one who is the one and the elite regimen, do you not? And you honestly think that you'll survive this?" I shift uncomfortably. Am I that much of an open book? "Will you get me in or what?" He gives me a long, serious look, then snickers. I'm right back to wanting to sock him, per usual. "Is it possible, Her Highness, the Chosen One, is once again asking help from lowly little me?" he smirks. "Imagine my great surprise. Maybe you want to say please, Wisty, and remember all the favors I've done for you in the past?" I bite my tongue, studying him. A single exposed light bulb swings from the ceiling, and the sense of being in an interrogation room isn't lost on me. He could have the place bugged. Who knows who he's working for? This could be a trap. "Deep breath. You have to trust someone, Wisty. This could be your last chance." "Look, Byron," I say calmly, rationally. "I know we haven't always been on the best of terms, but this is serious. This is the big time. Everything before this was just training leading up to this moment. I'm going to get him this time. I'm going to take on the greediest, most corrupt tyrant the world's ever known." I put a hand on Byron's and summon my revolutionary voice. "Don't you want to be a part of that?" He perches on the table in the corner and crosses his arms, unmoved. He purses his lips as if waiting for a better offer. My patience? Out the window. Time for a different approach. "Would you like to be a rodent, Swain?" I ask. "Because it's been a long time since I turned you back from a weasel. And frankly, I think the look really worked for you. Really meshed with your personality type." Byron takes out some new techie gadget and waves it threateningly. "And would you like me to call in the New Order officials right now and have you thrown back behind bars? It would just take the touch of a button. You forget that I'm the one who has power here, Wisty. That it's you asking me for help." I roll my eyes. Are we still playing that game? Hello, I'm trying to get closer to the one. The one who was going to fry you up as soon as he was done with you? And you're gonna, what, just swing back to the traitorous side and send in the troops? Byron shrugs, vague as ever. A man's gotta do what a man's gotta do. Something's off, even for smarmy Byron. Why are you being so weird? I demand. You seemed almost, well, normal last time I saw you. And now you're back to this passive-aggressive charade. What's going on? Are you okay? Byron shrugs, silent. Something is seriously up if the weasel doesn't have a grating comeback. Byron? You're acting as if you care about my well-being, he whines. I sigh. It's so easy to forget that the weasel has human emotions. I'm sorry. It's just that there's not a lot of time. Forgive me if I'm not coming off as warm and fuzzy as I usually do. I roll my eyes to emphasize the irony. Silence. Come on, Bee. You and I have been through hell and back together. You know I care. A cloud passes over his face. I heard about your little lip-locking session with Pierce, Byron mumbles. You mean when that snake assaulted me? I'm incredulous. Yeah, Swain, I'm really drooling over that baby killer and his creepy cold hands. He attacked me, but I see that that part of the gossip didn't